Good morning. The exercise that we analyze today is related to the exam assigned on September 8, 2016, and is related to a concrete structure that is present here in Pavia, in particular at the U Center Department of the University and the Engineering Faculty. This is a system that is conceived and carried out for analyzing and preventing damages caused by earthquakes. And as many of other systems that are present in Europe, not so many because the Pavia's one is the second for accuracy and amplitude. But in any case, as many others, this system is based on the usage of vibrating plates that basically consists on piston actuators moved by rotating motors, exploiting a worm screw that is mounted on them and transforms the rotational movement of the motor into a linear displacement, into a linear movement that is carried out with high frequency, so emulating the effect of a earthquake. As a result of the rotation, in fact, the screw creates the thrust, which, depending on the position of the piston, can be horizontal or vertical, and therefore simulates a jolting or undulating movement. The system, of course, is under the control of a microprocessor that detects the platform oscillations and regulates the power supply of the motor according to the type of the earthquake to be simulated. The control keeps the system stable if necessary. The idea is to move faster or slower the pistons so as to simulate different types of earthquakes, and after, by means of suitable sensors located in different parts of the objects located into the platform, oscillating plate, to analyze the damages that the different energies corresponding to the different earthquakes carried out can cause to the structures under analysis. The questions that are given by this exam are the same concerning the process that we are controlling, that is, draw the block schema of the acquisition regulation chain, identifying the input and output variables in every block, and in particular the process variables. Calculate the transfer function of the process, highlighting what variables must be known. Plot the Bode diagram of the loop function, that is the process plus the actuator, discussing the eventual problems in terms of stability, instability, and show the numerical implementation of the regulator if it is necessary. Design a circuit that allows to measure the process variable with a plus minus 5% precision. And the second part of the exam is instead related to very brief questions, mainly concerning theoretical topics that require as well a very quick and focused answer. The first is why the absolute encoder is not suitable to detect the movement direction. The second is related to the magnetic coupling, in particular of a flux chained to a coil, that provides a magnetic flux that is given typically by the inductive flux multiplied by the number of the coils involved in the irradiation. The question is, does this mean that the chain flux is greater than the inductive one? Third question, how to set the time for switching on a silicon-controlled rectifier or a TRIAC device using a microprocessor? And finally, in the command circuit that drives a stepper motor, what is the value of the drain and the source voltages when the threshold voltage applied to the gate of one of the two N-channel MOS is greater than the other voltage applied to the other mirrored MOS, in this case called V13, because we are referring to the couple of coils 1 and 3 that, depending on the driving of the MOS circuits, are alternatively activated. Okay. In the solution that I have prepared to you, you can see a first approximation, let's say, picture that shows the plate we are considering and the four pistons that exert an action, a force, horizontally directed towards the platform itself. The particular situation that is shown in this picture represents one of the possible models and one of the possible actions that this platform allows to simulate. In other words, we are considering that the earthquake we are trying to reproduce moves the table, the platform itself, in a horizontally directed solicitation. Of course, nothing prevents us from considering four other pistons directed vertically with respect to the plane into which the table is located, and exerting on it a force that is directed vertically, therefore simulating a jolting earthquake. The actuators in such a kind of situation are made of pistons, motors, and screws. Consider that the motor we are taking into account will be clearly a direct current motor, because we can't think that a stepper motor is enough strong to provide an elevation force for a table like this. And therefore, our concern is about to analyze the evolution of the motor in terms of driving in voltage or driving in current, that is the output of the actuator. The manipulated variable will be an angular rotation velocity or a torque. But in both the cases, the real output manipulated variable is always a rotation. And the motor is able to control the velocity of this rotation, while instead we want to control the position, the displacement due to such a kind of solicitation that we impress to the platform itself. Therefore, the presence of the screw is mandatory, because we know that a screw transforms a rotation movement into a linear displacement. The activity of the four pistons is organized by the controller, that is by the microprocessor, so as at every time a couple of them located on the same side are active and work, while the other two, the other couple, is inactive in that period, in that interval of time, expired, which the next couple will work and the previous one will be stopped. In this way, at every period, we apply a force to the platform directed the first time from left to right, the second time from right to left, and it is clear that if the frequency with which this alternation occurs is enough high, we have simulated the behavior of an undulating earthquake. The same can be done if the pistons are mounted into a vertical direction, therefore simulating a jolting earthquake. Clearly, we cannot neglect weight and the shape of the table that we are considering. And okay, this example, this exam is conceived without objects located onto the table, but usually the platform supports the presence of, for example, a house or a small building or a wall. Therefore, we could consider also the shape and the weight of the object that is located onto the platform. This means that the motor must be characterized considering the torque that is able to provide, because we cannot neglect, or in other words, we must consider the inertia components that could be present, and even some friction terms that can be considered both in the motor and in the structure of the platform itself. Therefore, we can write, as usual, that gamma is equal to gamma zero, the effective torque, plus gamma lowercase time the angular rotation velocity omega, plus j, the inertia term, that multiplies the angular acceleration omega prime. What is the process variable in this process? Clearly, we want to take a complete control at every time of the position of the table itself. Therefore, we can, let's say, generically write x table, meaning with this variable, the position of a suitable point of the table itself that is taken as the reference point of all the structure, all the table that is moving. The manipulated variable is clearly the torque, but we know that at the end we want to obtain an expression that involves the angular rotation velocity, and the controlled variable is the current. As often happens in this kind of processes, the real challenge, the real problem is to identify the effective torque. But in this case is not so problematic, because the effective torque is the part of the torque provided by the motor able to give us an effective, a real useful movement. Therefore, we simply apply the product of the Newtonian force exerted onto the platform itself time the arm that we are considering. Therefore, the gamma zero component can be written as the product of the mass of the platform time the acceleration we are able to impress to it time the arm. The arm is typically the radius of the screw that is connected to the motor. In other words, we are considering the point of application of the force exerted by the motor as the shaft that rotates accordingly to the movement of the motor itself. But the distance of this point from the point into which the force really must work is the radius of the screw, because we assume that the screw is a whole body connected to the piston, and the piston is associated to the body of the platform that must be moved under intelligent control made by the microprocessor. What is the acceleration? The acceleration clearly is a linear acceleration that is the second order derivative function of the process variable x table. But due to the presence of the screw, we can relate the acceleration to the angular acceleration of the rotation of the motor. Therefore, we can write that A of t is equal to omega prime t, or the second order derivative of the angular rotation, let's say, of the table itself, but the table doesn't rotate. We are thinking about the rotation of the motor. Therefore, the gamma expression will be mt times s square theta t time b. S square comes from the fact that we are considering this expression in the Laplace domain of the frequencies, plus gamma lowercase, the friction, time s theta t, plus the inertia s square theta t. Just a remark about the real significance of the friction and inertia components that include in themselves both the friction eventually present in the motor and in the table, in the platform, as well as the inertia of the motor and the inertia component of the earthquake simulating platform itself. And as we have said a few instants ago, the angular rotation theta t, the virtual angular rotation we have considered of the table, theta t is equal to a constant that multiplies the real rotation theta m of the shaft of the motor. Replacing theta m with xm, that is replacing the angular movements with the linear movements that the presence of the screw causes, we can write the general expression of the ring gain, of the control loop gain, that is given by the ratio between the process variable and the control variable. That is the ratio between the process variable and the manipulated variable time the ratio between the manipulated variable and the control variable itself. But this expression can be split into a sequence of ratios. The first is the linear displacement of the table divided by what we called the virtual rotation of the table. Then we have the virtual rotation of the table divided by the real rotation of the motor. Then we have the real rotation of the motor divided by the torque. And finally, we have the torque divided by the current. But as we have said just a minute before, the relationship between the linear displacement of the table and the real angular rotation of the motor is a constant. A constant that in this formula is called k prime times k, but The significance of the consideration doesn't change. It's constant. No poles or zeros must be considered in such an expression. Instead, the relationship between the angular rotation of the motor and the torque the motor can provide is a second-order equation in S, in the frequency variable, and can be expressed by 1 divided by B, the arm, time K, time the mass mt of the table, time S squared, plus K, a suitable constant, S, that is the frequency gain, and the friction gamma lowercase, plus K, S squared, the inertial component J. And finally, we have another constant called K third that expresses the relationship between the torque and the current. Looking better at the coefficients that are multiplied by S and by S squared, we discover that we can collect, joined together, the component with the mass and the component with the inertia. Therefore, we can express such a ratio in a more simplified way, writing that the gain is equal to K prime divided by S, that multiplies the sum of the mass times the arm plus the inertia component multiplied by S plus the friction term gamma lowercase. That is, we have a couple of poles. The first is into the origin of the frequencies range into which the process is called, is required to work. And the second is a real pole located at gamma divided by mt times the arm plus j. Clearly, the situation is potentially not stable, not asymptotically stable, because there is the possibility that the Bode diagram curve crosses the 0 dB axis with a slope that is minus 40 dB per decade, that is the margin of the phase becomes zero or negative. But we know that this situation can be very easily managed, because with a compensation pole zero, that is by multiplying the transfer function, the gain control loop function, by a ratio that features a zero corresponding to the real pole of the calculated transfer function, divided by a suitable pole located at high frequencies, we can exclude the crossing of the 0 dB axis with the negative minus 2 slope, and we can assure the stability of the system at least up to the frequency into which the diagram cuts the 0 dB axis. Therefore, we, let's say, extend the bandwidth into which the process can work. And we have several times explained and also written how this function can be implemented numerically onto the microprocessor. So we skip this part of the explanation, since we have already dealt with all the problems, the considerations related to the overflow, and more. What is important instead to establish in such a kind of control for the engineer is the kind of measurement that is possible to implement. We have several possibilities. For example, we could mount an angular transducer directly onto the motor and we can assume that we know all the constants that relate the angular rotation of the motor with the linear displacement, the linear movement of the platform we are using for the simulation of the earthquake. In this case, we want to apply the transducer directly onto the process, directly into the location into which the phenomenon that we want to keep under control occurs. Therefore, we use a position transducer, and since the movement is bidirectional, we can use the typical transducer that is employed in such cases, that is the differential linear position one. We remember more or less the structure of this sensor that is based on a rod that is made of ferromagnetic material. This rod will be irradiated by a magnetic field caused by a primary solenoidal circuit supplied with alternate AC current, and the rod will reflect, will mirror, let's say, this magnetic field on another couple of inductors of solenoidal circuits, and the coupling, the irradiation, will be greater on the first of these two solenoidal circuits if the movement of the rod is directed in towards a certain direction, while the coupling will be greater with the second solenoidal circuit if the movement of the rod will be oriented, will be directed towards another direction. Therefore, this is very suitable, very ideal, if we can say, for the movement that we are considering. We know that the output voltage that we can have from the transducer is proportional to the linear displacement of the object that we are considering, but we remember that the supply that is necessary to provide to this transducer is alternate. Therefore, we need a rectifier, and in particular a rectifier that highlights the direction of the movement by providing an output signal that is in phase or not with the power supply voltage provided to the transducer itself. That is a synchronous rectifier. We could also choose the diode bridge. I have drawn the circuit in the picture, in the solution that I have prepared, and finally you see that the output of this circuit is connected to the digital to analog converter for the transformation in a binary number that can be read by the microprocessor. Here we can observe that there is a little bit difference with respect to other questions in other exercises, because the tolerance that is required is given with a plus and with a minus sign. That is, we want to be, let's say, precise, accurate, 5%, but overestimating and underestimating the real value of the voltage provided to the converter. This means that the real tolerance that is allowed to have is twice the number, the value that is provided. If I say that the accuracy required is plus minus 5%, the amplitude of the stair, of the level, of the interval of input voltages to the ADC that will be converted into a specific number in output will be twice that number, will be, in other words, equal to 10. Of course, when we say 5, 10, we have in mind relative values that must be considered related to the maximum possible value, that is 100, because the numbers that are provided are percentages, relative errors. Therefore, the number of the bits necessary to assure such a kind of precision is the logarithm on base 2 of the ratio full scale 100 divided by the tolerance given 10, that is the logarithm on base 2 of 10. And this can be easily assured by considering an output number of bits equal to 4 for the ADC, and considering that we have also to add the start of conversion and end of conversion bits interfacing the microprocessor with the ADC for the management of the handshake protocol of the communication. And now let's switch to the questions that are made in the exam. The first of which is related to the correct usage of the encoders. In fact, the issue, say the problem is that the absolute encoder is not used, is not suitable, when it is necessary not only to establish the amount of rotation, but also when it is necessary to evaluate the direction into which this movement occurred. And the question is why the absolute encoder doesn't provide this information, and of course who can provide this information. The answer is quite straightforward. If you consider how the absolute encoder is carried out, you will remember that basically it consists on a certain number of crowns, circular crowns, and the number of the crowns corresponds to the number of the bits that express the rotation. But if you start from a certain codification and if you arrive to another codification, simply you can establish the amount of the rotation by making the difference between the old value and the present value that the microprocessor has acquired. However, it is not possible to establish how the new position of the encoder has been reached. In other words, the new angular location has been reached by rotating clockwise or counterclockwise, has been reached by means of a single full rotation plus a small displacement, on the, or after many full rotations, many rounds, we could say, and again a small displacement. This is not possible to be understood by using the absolute encoder. Conversely, we know that using the incremental encoder, the phase shift between the internal crown and the external crown allows, on the basis of the sequence of the edges that are acquired by the microprocessor, to establish the direction into which the rotation took place. And therefore, this is the possible solution that can be used instead of using the absolute encoder. The second question is related to magnetic field coupling. In particular, the question is, the magnetic flux change to a coil is given by the inductive flux multiplied by the number of the coils irradiated by the flux itself. We remember this expression when we defined and described the so-called Faraday-Neumann law. We remember, in fact, that we said that into a suitable circuit the presence of a magnetic flux that is variable in the time can induce the presence of electromotive force that is equal to the derivative function of the chain flux with this circuit in the time. And the chain flux was given by the product of the number of the coils involved into the irradiation time the flux for every coil. We remember that in that case the number of the coils was given by the density of the coils per length unit time the displacement, the number of the coils involved in terms of distance. It was, let's say, the linear displacement, the linear distance corresponding to the number of the coils considered. We called that distance x, and the derivative function of x was a velocity. And if you remember, we used this expression to say that the electromotive induced force was a possible measurement of the velocity with which a rod exerting a magnetic field influence into a solenoidal circuit enters or exits from the solenoidal circuit itself. Coming to the answer to this question, we can observe that the product of the number of the coils involved into the irradiation time the flux for every single coil is the expression that corresponds to the chain flux. Therefore, since the number n of the coils involved is typically an integer number greater or equal to 1, clearly the chain flux is greater than the flux related to every single coil, but this doesn't imply that we have a physical quantity, a physical magnitude that provides energy, that multiplies the magnetic field by a suitable factor. This is a simple mathematical magnitude that is considered to estimate the induced voltage in eventual irradiated electronic circuit through this flux and therefore through the magnetic field that is considered. The third question is a little more difficult because it is related to concepts that we have learned in the second year of the computer bachelor for those who belong to this track of studies, and probably for those who come from a mechanical bachelor correspond to a knowledge that has never dealt with in the past. Looking at the picture that I have prepared in the solution, we see that the way through which we can establish, set the delay is based on a very elementary architecture into which the microprocessor exits the time base value that is given to a counter and the counter receives the output of a block corresponding to an electronic oscillator. Let's describe the component. A counter is an electronic device that typically counts from 0 up to a suitable number that depends on the number of the bits of which the counter consists on. Therefore, if the output of the counter is characterized by n bits, the counter will count from 0 up to 2 power n minus 1. That is, an 8-bit counter will count from 0 up to 255. What is the object that is counted? You see in the figure that the counter receives the output of an oscillator unit. Therefore, it receives a pulse train with a frequency that is established by the electronic characteristic of the oscillator itself. For example, if the oscillator runs at 1 MHz, the pulse train that it exits will be characterized by a period equal to 1 microsecond. If the oscillator runs at 5 MHz, the period of the pulses will be, of course, 200 milliseconds, and more. Therefore, counting a certain number of pulses correspond to calculating a suitable interval of time. If the counter arrives at the end of its possible range, 255, and the oscillator runs at 1 MHz, the maximum interval of time the counter can estimate is 256 microseconds, consider that we start from zero. Of course, we can establish the number of the pulses that can be counted or must be counted by this device. The counter has a suitable input through which a microprocessor can set the maximum value of counts that the counter must consider. This value is called TBV, time base value. Therefore, the interval of time that we can establish, that we can count in this case, is the product of TBV time, the clock period of the pulses that exit from the oscillator. That could be, of course, very useful when we need to switch up an SCR or a TRIAC device by providing a pulse that in this case arrives from the microprocessor output. The delay from the moment into which the power supply of the silicon control rectifier crosses zero will be counted in this way by establishing a suitable value in the counter and waiting for the conclusion of the counter, of the counting phase itself. In this moment, the counter will exit a suitable pulse, a suitable signal, on the output that is shown in the figure called carry overflow, and that line can be connected to the gate of the SCR device so as to trigger the enabling of the SCR itself and of what is connected to it. And finally, the last question is related to a stepper motor. In particular, it says, in the common circuit of a stepper motor, what is the value of the drain and the source voltages when the threshold is greater than V13? Okay, let's consider the situation of the driving circuit that we are mentioning. Is shown in the picture. You see the couple of inductors called 1 and 3, and the couple of MOS devices that are driven. The first features a gate that is connected to a threshold. The second features a gate that is connected instead to the voltage command that activates every time or the coil number 1 or the coil number 3. One MOS must be active since there is a current generator that asks for a current that must be provided by one of them, and this assures, if you remember, the alternative activation of the coils and therefore the correct movement of the stepper motor. But the question is, let's consider what is the voltage at the drain point of the MOS and what is the voltage at the source point of the MOS. And in the figure, in the solution, I have tried to write some equations that show as in the first case the voltage is the power supply voltage minus the voltage that is lost onto the inductor L time the derivative function of the current in the time minus the amount of the voltage that is lost due to the resistive nature of the inductor, if it is the case, RL times the current. And this is the first voltage. The second is simply the threshold that we are considering, or the one, the V13, if we are considering the other MOS, minus the drop voltage of a typical PN junction, as in a N-channel MOS is present, that is V gamma, at least 0.7 volts. Of course, depending on the fact that one MOS is in conduction or not, clearly we must apply these equations to the MOS that is active. If the threshold is greater than V13, these values will correspond to the drain and the source voltages of the MOS connected to the threshold. I think that that's enough for today, and I think that that's enough for the course. We have considered the four sections: transducers, relative electronic circuits, actuators, and control algorithms. We have seen several processes that can be controlled through this approach, and we have seen at least 10 exams with different situations to be managed, to be controlled. You will find the solutions on the website, and you will find on the website other exams that can help you to improve your preparation. Next week we have only one day for meet us, because on Friday you know there will be the session devoted to the master degree and bachelor degree achievement by the student. Therefore the lessons are suspended. I can propose you that instead of explaining, describing comments, exercises, and so, I can wait your questions or your need for clarification. Therefore, if you want that on Thursday we have a meeting, like for example a reception, please write me at my address francesco.leporati@unipv.it, and I will organize a virtual room in Zoom so as we can meet personally this time, and we can try to clarify points of the course that are not completely clear, or I can specify better the solutions that I have presented into these lessons of the exercises and of the exam, and we can do, let's say, anything you consider necessary. Moreover, we can comment also that exam that I assigned you yesterday, and on which you could try to work by yourselves just to test your level of preparation and the comprehension of the topics that we have seen in all these lessons that I understand are not so easy to manage and to write or to use for solving the problems. I think that this could be a very nice and important opportunity for clarifying all the issues in looking forward the preparation of the exam that will be at the end of June. Of course, in the following weeks, you can write me by email with questions, with problems that you have, and I will be happy and very glad to answer you. Therefore, the appointment is on next Thursday. I remain waiting for your messages by email, and I will set a Zoom connection for all the things that it is necessary to clarify. Have a nice weekend, and see you soon.